they're already in Egypt.
Right, so I'm beginning of Parshas Vayechi.
They're getting ready to leave.
So Yaakov already calls in Yosef and makes him promise that he's going to take him out of Egypt and to be buried in the land of Israel. And Rashi quotes three reasons why he wanted out of Egypt. Number one, he says, is he knew, I guess through prophecy, that there are going to be the 10 plagues. And one of the plagues is going to be the kinim, the lice. And he said, I don't want the lice eating my body. So therefore, he said, make sure you don't bury me in Egypt. So parenthetically, we see this Rashi is saying a big chiddush. He's saying the same pshat as the Rambam in Perush HaMishnayos, because the simple pshat is the plagues only happened to the Egyptians, not the Jews. So what was Yaakov worried about? So what? There was Makkah Kinim. So apparently, according to this Rashi and according to the Rambam, the Makkah Kinim also affected the Jews, not as severe as the Egyptians, I might add, but still on a certain level. Why? Why did Kinim happen to the Jews and not all the other Makkahs? So,
happened in the land, though, I thought Rashi said. When he was buried, he was on the ground. He might not attack the people as they were walking. Mm-hmm. When they're in the, I don't know, I mean, this said.
Right, so.
That's do with Arabs. They just read it. I just read it. That's what I mean.
That was
something about the Kinim attacks the land.
Right, and
so
that.
He didn't say, but if he's buried in the ground, he would be attacked. But it didn't affect the Jews living
And that's why it's Rav Alpert explained, because that's a makkah on the land. You're in Chutz La'aretz, and don't forget it. No matter how comfortable Goshen is, Berlin is, or Borough Park is, you're still in.
Or Hamilton.
You're still in Chutz La'aretz. So it was a makkah on the land. So therefore, on a global level, that's why they weren't excluded. That's why Yaakov said, "Get me out of here." Another answer Rashi gives is because he didn't want them to make an avodah zarah out of him. As we see, that's common practice. They like taking a dead Jew and making him into an avodah zarah. So Yaakov is well aware of that practice, and therefore he said, get me out of Egypt. I don't want them to make an idol worship out of me. And the third pshat is a more mystical explanation, that we have a tradition, a pi Kabbalah, that anyone who's buried out of Israel, it's called Gilgal, they're going to roll, the body is going to be rolling until they get to Israel. So therefore he wanted to be buried in Israel to avoid the pain of being rolled on the ground there.
Through the earth.
Right, which is a separate discussion I'm not going into now, whether it's preferable for one to be buried in Israel. If you're living in Israel, then of course. But it's a question among the poskim whether it's a good idea to be buried, because on one hand you bring it's the highest level of tumah, a dead body, the avi avosa tumah. On the other hand, it's the Indian of kaparas, that's a machlokas haposkim. I think the minhag Yisrael is to do it, but there are, Rav Hank and others were against it for other reasons, but that's a separate shir. Everyone agrees for Gedolei Yisrael it's okay, because their tzaddikim are even matar, even when they're dead, but for the average person,
so what do they do with the bones of Yaakov for 40 years? They took him out of Egypt.
Underwater or something. Remember they said that Moshe was getting the bones?
The bones of Yosef.
No, that was the bones of Yosef. I don't know about Yaakov. Yaakov was buried in
Eretz Yisrael. He wanted Yosef to bury him.
Yeah, so his bones
were in Egypt. He had to wait till they went out, and then 40 years more till Moshe would bring him to India. Where else would he be buried?
Yosef took him out there.
No, it was Yosef. Right, Yaakov went out, away. They had a 7-day mourning period, then they took him out.
They took him direct.
It was Yosef that take him out of the Nile River, So we see Yaakov is very concerned, based on various reasons, not to be buried in Egypt. He didn't even want to be buried in Egypt. That leads us to tonight's discussion. What about being buried in Egypt? What about living in Egypt? The Torah tells us in three places, at least according to the Yerushalmi.
According to Rambam, he was sitting three times.
Well, we'll see about that. It's not so pashut. We'll see. It's even wrong.
He said that himself. He might be wrong.
That's a popular misconception we'll get to. So, in Parshas Shoftim is the first time, not the first time, but in Parshas Shoftim, the Torah tells us about the prohibition of going back to Egypt. Then, according to the Yerushalmi, based on one of the psukim in the Tochacha, in Parashas Kisavu, which says, I will send you back to Egypt with ships. And, you know, basically, you're not, no one's going to want you, whatever. So from there, the Yerushalmi learns out another prohibition to go back to Egypt. And a third pasuk in Bishalach, when Hashem tells the Jews, you won't see the Egyptians again, the Yerushalmi learns out a third prohibition about going back to Egypt. So three times in the Torah, it warns us about living in Egypt.
What was the first time?
The first is in Parashas Shoftim, where first it talks about the kings don't go back to Mitzrayim to get horses, and then the end of the pasuk says, and don't live in Egypt. So, and in fact, the Rambam writes in Hilchos Melachim, Perek Hey, Halacha Zayin, in chapter 5, Halacha Zayin, the Rambam writes as follows, Mutter Uishkon Bechol Olam, it's permitted to live anywhere in the world, Chutz Mi Mitzrayim, except for Egypt. The only place in the world you're not permitted to live, according to the Rambam, is in Egypt. And in fact, it's the Rambam Lishitason. It's the Rambam consistent with this, even though this is a point of contention, but the Rambam nowhere mentions the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. The Ramban, Nechman, he clearly states it's a biblical obligation to live in Eretz Yisrael. Among the Rambam, it's a major discussion in the Achronim why the Rambam left it out. Then you have the whole variation. He left it out because he holds there's no mitzvah, or he counted in other places. I'm not going into that now. But it's the Rambam Lishitason. You're allowed to live anywhere in the world, because according to the Rambam, he doesn't say you have a chiyuv, an obligation to live in Eretz Yisrael.
He counts that as one of the 613 mitzvahs Ramban.
Ramban counts it, the Rambam doesn't.
Well, he doesn't follow the Sefer Chinuch.
I know, but many say the Rambam still holds from it, but he doesn't count it for other reasons.
Yeah,
but that's a separate shiur.
Yeah,
right. So the funny thing is, where was the Rambam when he was writing this? When the Rambam said you could live anywhere in the world except Egypt, we all know the Rambam lived in Egypt for many years.
Bastard.
So how in the world could the Rambam live in Egypt if he says it's permitted to live anywhere in the world except Egypt? In fact, this is what I'm getting, this is what you're mentioning. The Kafto of Perach, one of the first people to travel to Eretz Yisrael and Egypt, he spoke to the Einakels of the Rambam about 200 to 300 years after the Rambam lived in Egypt, and they asked him, how did the Rambam live in Egypt? So they said the Rambam signed the Rambam signed his letters. You know, he writes his name and he says, Ha'over b'chol yom b'shloshe lavim. According to the Kaft of a Perach, he used to sign all his letters, I am sinning, I am living in Egypt, violating the three prohibitions of the Torah. However, there's a major problem with this, because we have many letters from the Rambam, and we don't have any that have this writing on it. So it's highly suspect that the Rambam ever wrote this, because disbelieved then, why would he write it? And Avadi Yosef has a tshuva when he was asked during
the first letter. Who said he wrote his
the Kafto of a Perach spoke
they never,
to
they never said so, they
right.
Never
he said he says his Einakels claim that.
Oh, yeah,
but they never. We don't have. We have no record of any letter like that.
Okay. Right.
That's why it's highly suspect it's true. And Avadi Yosef, when he writes a tshuva, he was asked if Shiloh, when the Sadat and Begin peace treaty, the newspaper men wanted, could they go down to Egypt? Because there's a prohibition to live in Egypt. Are we allowed to go down? And like,
well,
you know.
Only go for a few
okay,
days,
that,
maybe.
That's a separate question, that's visiting different. Egypt. But they asked Avadi Yosef the question, are they allowed to go to Cairo? So he quotes the Kafta of Perach and disproves it on many grounds. He says, it's not true. The Rambam never signed his letters like that. And he basically concluded that you're allowed to, whatever, but that we'll get into. So the question is, what was the heter of the Rambam? The Rambam, and not only the Rambam, but we use the Rambam because he was the most famous. But the many other Gedolei Yisrael, and there were Jewish communities living in Egypt.
Yeah,
so how in the world...
Alexandria.
So how in the world could they live in Egypt if there's a biblical prohibition not to live in Egypt? So
there's one professor at Oxford who has had access to the Cambridge, the Geniza from Cambridge, it's in Cambridge, that Shechter took out of the Ben Ezra Synagogue in Alexandria, and that he's been writing a lot of books on this, the subject of the what he identifies as the Rambam's pieces there. And
right.
I saw him in Washington, and I went to a lecture, and he showed us slides of the actual, you know, photos of the Rambam's handwriting and sheets.
Right, they have. You mean they found the actual things, right?
Oh yeah, they found a lot of actual things in the Geniza.
Right. So we haven't found any letters with tablets, unless maybe more recently they have. I haven't heard about this. It's probably not true. So we have to give some answers. So many Rishonim ask this question on the Rambam, and they give answers. We'll have to see how good their answers are.
The question:
what?
Why did he live in
Israel? How? Yeah. How was his head? Mutter lishkal mechol olam chutz miMitzrayim. How in the world could
he took care of the? He was doctor for the royalty, maybe.
Right. So we'll have to see. Well, perhaps we'll suggest it at the end.
Oh yeah. Right.
So the first answer is on the Ritva, the Ritva in Yuma, and Daf Lamed Chesam Beis 38b. He asked, "How could the Rambam live in Egypt and all the other pious Jews?" So the Ritva is a Chiddush. He writes, the Isser of living in Mitzrayim is only when the Beis HaMikdash is up and the Jews are living, Klai Yisrael is living in Eretz Yisrael. But Bizman HaZeh, when we no longer have a Beis HaMikdash, therefore his question is, Kol Chutz La'aretz Shava. All of Chutz La'aretz is equal. There's no difference between Egypt and Miami Beach. And Hamilton or Toronto.
That's only one of the Beis HaMikdash. That's what I was going to ask you.
That's what I'm saying. So today, even though we have Eretz Yisrael, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, so we're still in Golis. So,
that's a clever answer.
So therefore, he says, Kol Chutz La'aretz Shava, and therefore that's why the Rambam was permitted to live in Egypt. However, it might be a good answer, but it doesn't. But it's not good. But it's not good for the Rambam. You can't give this answer. He's giving this answer in the Rambam. If you want, independently, it's a fine answer. But you can't say this pshat in the Rambam. Why not? Because as I read to you, what did the Rambam write? Mutter Lishkon. The Rambam didn't say that, but it's not true. Rambam says, Mutter Lishkon B'chol Olam. It's permitted to live anywhere in the world
except
Egypt. So obviously, the Rambam didn't think all of Chutz La'aretz was equal. So it's a nice answer, but that won't help us with the Rambam. The Ritva, if you want to pass like the Ritva, so you could live in Egypt. But according to the Rambam, we need another answer. So there's a second answer from the Mari Kash, Rav Yaakov Kastrov, on a Sefer on Evin HaEzer. He wants to suggest another Chiddush LaHalacha. He says, perhaps the prohibition when the Torah says to live in Mitzrayim, it's only the part where the Jews were enslaved in, where the Jews are actually slaves. But he wants to suggest that Cairo is a new city. It wasn't around during the time of Golis Mitzrayim. What's his proof? Because the Gemara says in Sukkah, and Nun Aleph Amud Aleph, the people of Alexandria Mitzrayim, it says, were punished, it says, because they came down. They were punished, it says in the Gemara, that they went from Israel down to Egypt, and it says they were enslaved there. And therefore, perhaps he says, maybe it's only prohibited to live in, to go back to Alexandria or some other parts of the old Egypt, but Cairo.
Probably Pithom and Ramses.
Right.
Where they were avodim.
And he wants to bring a riot from Hilchot Gittin. Because the way they wrote a get, if you were in Cairo, and they wrote a get, the halacha is, they say, Cairo, which is a city near Mitzrayim. So it didn't say it was in Mitzrayim, so he wants to suggest, perhaps, the Rambam lived in Cairo. That's why it was permitted. But other places where the Jews were enslaved, Pithom Ramses, wherever the places were, that's his suggestion to explain why the Rambam was able to live in Cairo. Again, it's a nice explanation, but it won't help us for the Rambam. Why won't it help us for the Rambam? Because I'll tell you why. Because number one is, geographically, it doesn't make much. It's very difficult to say, because if you look at a map, Alexandria is a port city of the Mediterranean. If they were right off the Mediterranean, why did the Chumash make such a big deal out of the Nile River? They could have had, they had other water supplies. And not only that, but according to this, the world legend that the Jews built the pyramids wouldn't be true either. So therefore it's a little difficult to say that the Rambam, and also the Rambam himself, he gives the definition, and the Rambam writes that it's mutter to live anywhere in the world except Mitzrayim. And he goes through the boundaries. He says from the Mediterranean Sea towards the west, opposite to the land of. So if you look up where the Rambam writes it, it seems to include the whole area. So therefore, again, it's a nice terrace by Rav Castro, but it won't help us for the Rambam.
Where's the Rambam's quote from? What source of the Rambam?
is about when he says Mutta Lishka Machal Olam. But that's a separation. The Rambam, that's why it's probably the most popular sefer with the most comments, because the Rambam didn't write sources. That was one of the complaints they had on the Rambam. He didn't write any sources. I mean, the sources from the Gemara, he writes in the beginning of his sefer.
No, yeah, so where was he saying?
No, the Rambam doesn't quote sources.
No, not the source of where he got it from, but where is it written in the Rambam?
Oh, the Rambam. The Rambam says, in Hilchos Melachim.
Mishnah Torah.
Yeah, Mishnah Torah, Perek Hei Halacha
Zayin. Mishnah Torah.
That's where he writes in the Laws of the Kings. Right. In fact, people don't like the name Mishnah Torah, because Mishnah Torah is really the book of Devarim. That's what it's Chazal called, the fifth book, Deuteronomy, they call it, because it's a summary. So the Rambam writes, all you need is two books. Take the 24 books of Tanakh, and take my book, and it's all you need. That's why he called this book Mishnah Torah. That's why people don't like it, so we don't call it the Mishnah Torah, we call it the Yad. Because people don't like it. It was a little too much gaiva there, so we never call it the Mishnah Torah, because we don't like those kind of statements. But either way, it goes. So that's the second suggestion, but it won't help us for the Rambam, because the Rambam seems to say the whole Egypt was included. So we need a third possibility in the Rambam. So it says the third possibility is from the Urayim, from the Hagos Mordechai quotes from the Urayim, the Mordechai, the Smag. A very interesting explanation as follows. Based on the Pasuk says, Vosifun Washub Baderech Hazeh. So the Urayim says, Shalo Asra Torah Ela Washub Derech Hazeh. The Torah says the only time it's prohibited to go to Egypt if you're going from Israel to Egypt. But if you go from America to Egypt, if you go from Washington to Egypt, if you go from Hamilton to Egypt, there's no prohibition. The Rambam went from Morocco to Egypt. So therefore, there's no prohibition to go. It's specifically going from Eretz Yisrael to Egypt. In fact, the Divrei Shaul wants to take it even a step further. He says that in Parshas Maaseh, the Torah goes into great length about the way the Jews traveled from Egypt to Israel. In fact, there are 42 stops the Jews made between Egypt and Israel. So he wants to add a bigger chiddush. It's only prohibited if you take the same 42 ways that the Egyptians went to, Jews went to Egypt. If you go back those same 42 ways, then you violate it.
They left Egypt with 42 steps.
Therefore, if you go back from Israel, if you go from Israel to Egypt that way, that's when you violate the prohibition.
Okay.
So according to the Urayim, this going from Israel, you don't have to take the 42 ways, but the Divrei Shaul says, and specifically the 42 ways, it's a little difficult because the Gemara says in Sukkah, Nunal, which I just quoted you, the Anshei Alexandra were punished for moving back from Israel to Egypt. It's difficult to say there were such Rishayim that they dafka took the 42 ways. That's a little more difficult. But you still have the Urayim who said you don't need the 42 steps. In fact, the Ethiopian Jews, Eldon Hadadi, who was one of the popular figures, when he writes in his book, so when they went from Ethiopia, first they went from Israel to Egypt, and then they went to Ethiopia, so he writes in his Sefer, and we were made sure not to go from Israel to Egypt the same way the Jews went from Egypt to Israel. So he already was alluding to that other Pshat. So some want to say that's why the Rambam went from Morocco, and therefore it's permitted to go from Morocco to Egypt. As long as it's not from Israel to Egypt, there's no prohibition. However,
the three things were in the Torah they read from.
Right.
The three prohibitions. Where does he say anything there that it's only from Israel to Egypt?
No, that's his Kiddush.
Oh,
right. In fact, which touches on. So, again, a nice explanation, a nice, very original. No, because the Torah says, Goshav Baderech Hazeh. That's why he's saying it. Because the way the Torah writes it.
I know what he's saying, you have to go to the same. But I'm talking basically in the beginning. Where does he get that you can go back to Egypt from? It says three places in the Torah not to go to it.
I know. And one of them it says, Vososha Bederech Hazeh. So he learns out.
Oh,
it says that way. He learns out the means specifically.
Only that way.
Yeah,
only
okay,
that way.
Yeah, that's where he gets it from. The problem is like this. What is the nature of the prohibition of going to Egypt? Of the prohibition of the Torah of Egypt? We assume the prohibition was to live in Egypt. But what the Urayim is saying, a big chiddush, The prohibition isn't to live in Egypt. The prohibition is to go back to Egypt. In fact, according to the Arayim, the Isser is going there, but once you're there, according to the Arayim, then it should be permitted to live there. In fact, the Rambam writes, also in Hilchos Malachim, there in Halacha Ches,
you're not permitted to go there, how could you live there?
No, I'll tell you how. That's what he discusses. So the Rambam writes, no, Ein Lokin Alav Zeh. You don't, if for someone who lives in Egypt, normally if you eat treif, if you violate a law in the Torah, you get a good old-fashioned whooping. You get 39 makas. The Rambam writes, living in Egypt, you would not get a good old-fashioned whooping. Why not? Because one of the Rambam's principle is, if it's a law she'ain bo maisa, any law which involves no action, if you violate a prohibition passively, it's still prohibited, but you don't get a good old-fashioned whooping. You only get one if you actively violate. Right. Right, but no, but you wouldn't get anyway, Marcus, I don't know. I'm about to be saying, even a losase, you have to actively do it. If you violate a losase passively, you don't get, how is it possible? How do you get down to Egypt in the first place? How could the Rambam say going down to Egypt is a lav she'ein bo maisa?
Somebody would have to bring you there.
Right, so
your father, your mother.
So how could you go? The question is, how according to the Rambam could this be a lav she'ein bo maisa? Maybe if you're born there, but the Rambam tells you how. You know how? Because there's certain times you're allowed to go down to Egypt, and the Rambam brings down one for business. If you want to do some business dealings, like we see Shlomo did, we want to do some business dealings in Egypt. One is permitted to go down temporarily. For business. So the Rambam writes, so let's say someone goes down for business purposes, and then later on changes his mind and he stays there. That's a lav she'ein bo maisa, because when he went down, it was permitted. It was only after he changed his mind. So the Rambam sheet is in general, even if you do an action, but if you could have done the Avera through an inaction, even if you did the action, it's still classified as a lav she'ein bo maisa. It's not classified in how you personally violate the sin. The Rambam's principle is, if the sin could be done without a maisa, we classify anyone who does this aveira, it's a lav. So even if you actually went down, it's a lav she'ein bo maisa. The Rambam writes, if you went down for business, which is permitted.
Where did he get that from?
That's a separate question. I mean, he probably got it from Gemara's, but I'm saying, but the Rambam, that's a separate question. The Rambam got anything from, but I'm sure he had good sources for it. So the Rambam says, and usually the Nose Kalim, that's what they do on the side, they tell you where he gets it from, the Kesef Mishnah, the Lecha Mishnah. So he says, if you go, I mean, he's not saying a Chiddush, I think everyone agrees to the, this is in the Chiddush, I think it's accepted, yeah.
But it doesn't make sense, if a person goes down for business, it's definitely a Maisa, he's going down for a Maisa.
I know, but it's Mutter.
It's Mutter.
The problem is, there's no Aveira going down, but the Maisa, you have to do a sin, which is a Maisa, not a Mitzvah, which is, going down for business is a mitzvah, a parnasa, to make a living. You're allowed to. In fact, it's a mitzvah too.
So the maisa.
I know Shlomo was. Shlomo got punished also. He made a mistake there. We'll get back to Shlomo. He was darshin on time in the crow. We'll get to that. But the shitas harambam is, even if you do an action, but if it can be done without an action, it's a lav she'ein bo maisa. So what do we see from the Rambam? The Rambam shitas, even if you came there in a permitted way, but if you stay there, it's still us. You don't get makis.
It's awesome.
So therefore, we see the Rambam can't hold like the Urayim. Urayim's chiddush was that the Isser is going there, but it's a nice shot, but it doesn't help the Rambam, because the Rambam himself says it's us to stay there, even if you went down in a permitted way.
So far, he's stuck there.
So therefore, we're still stuck with a good shot in the Rambam. We still need an answer according to the Rambam. Why? What was his heter to live in Egypt?
Who said he had a heter?
Well, we're assuming.
Did he say that?
What?
You're just assuming it.
Yeah, well, the Rambam, we assume. I assume a Gadol like the Rambam wouldn't be living in Aveira. That's my working assumption.
Okay.
You have a different assumption? So if you have a different assumption, then you shouldn't be at the shir tonight. A4. So the Pri Chadash, wants to give another pshat in the Rambam. Also, a very interesting Lamdash pshat. But we'll see, it won't fit into the Rambam either.
Who's the Pre-Chadash? Where did he live?
One of the Achronim, but he quotes from the Mordechai. Mordechai is a Risha. The Pre-Chadash was one of the, it's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, he's one of the postim they bring down a lot. So he brings down this halacha we know in the Torah. It's usa to marry a ger mitzri. It's also to marry a convert from Egypt. We don't accept converts from Egypt. Basically, it's a pasuk in the Chumash. No Kiddush in the Rambam. Yeah. But it's also to marry a ger mitzri. However, the Rambam writes, but bizman hazeh, you're permitted to marry a ger mitzri. What do you mean? How can you go against what the Torah is? The Torah says it's aser, and the Rambam says it's mutter, because it's a famous incident in history. Sancheirav Melech Ashur. Sancheirav Melech Ashur, he took the world and he mixed everyone up. He was the first one to do ethnic cleansing.
Right.
He took the Syrians and moved them to Egypt, to Iraq. And his idea was, he took the 10 tribes out of Israel. He did it with, if everyone's a refugee living in a different country, he'll be king forever. That was his plan. So we have a tradition today that we no longer know who anyone is anymore, at least among the non-Jews. So he says, the fact that someone who lives in Egypt, we don't assume they're Egyptian. The Rambam writes, it's permitted to marry someone who came from Egypt because we don't assume they're a ger mitzri because sancheiro bilbo kol olam. And that's why the Rambam also writes this by the Zayin Amamim. We know there's a mitzvah in the Torah to destroy the seven nations
but they're not in Israel now.
No, but we don't know.
We don't know.
No, but that's the same thing. That's because of sancheiro. He's bilbo kol olam, and therefore we don't know who they are. It's a question why we still know who Amalek is, because the same line the Rambam says, but there is a mitzvah to destroy Amalek. That's a separate share. So it goes like this. And the Rambam writes, it's mutter today to marry a ger mitzvah, because since Sancheira mixed up the world, ethnic cleansing, so therefore they're no longer Egyptians, and therefore we can assume they're not Egyptians, we can marry them. So therefore comes along the pre-chadish and says he wants to extend the chiddush. Just like the Rambam writes that the people in Egypt are no longer Egyptians, and therefore you can marry them, so too one is permitted to live there now. The whole issue is to live with the Egyptian people, but today they're no longer Egyptians. So therefore he says it's mutter to live there. So what's the chiddush of the pre-chadash? He's writing it's a din in the people, it's a din in the gavra, not a din in the chefza, as they say in yeshivas. That it's not the makom of Mitzrayim, that's the skiddish of the pre-chadash, is the isser of living in Mitzrayim is living with the people. They're the Ran people, you can't live with them, but the land itself, who cares? Parenthetically, along the lines, I heard a nice distinction between American security on the airplanes and Israeli security on the airplanes. What's the difference between Israel? Why is Israel security much greater, much better than American security on all the time, but on the airplanes,
because of a sham.
That's true, but besides that, the difference is like this. Americans are checking for bombs. Israelis are checking for bombers. It's the Gavra versus the Chefza Machlok. It's Egyptian. That's why they have stop 85-year-old grandwoman, because they don't care who they are. They're checking for bombs, not people. Israelis look for bombs. They check the profiles, and they check for bombers. That's why they're much more successful. That's what the pre-chadish says here.
It's against the law to profile people in America.
Exactly.
They're screaming about.
Okay, so you can live with the bombers then. So therefore,
that's where they were.
So the pre-chadish writes, it's an interesting chiddush that since they no longer consider the Egyptians, it's an Issa Gavra, the Torah is concerned with the Egyptian people are tamei, are corrupt, and therefore, that's why the Rambam was able to live there. However, again, it's a nice pshat. But the Rambam doesn't seem to learn this way. How do I know the Rambam seems to learn it's on the makom and not the people? Because the Minchas Chinuch points this out already. The commentary on the Sefer HaChinuch. The Rambam writes, Mutta Wishkon v'chol olam chutzmu Mitzrayim, right? You can live anywhere except in Mitzrayim. Then the Rambam goes on, and the Chidah writes this in his Sefer Chaim Shaul. He writes, let's say if Beis Din, the Sanhedrin, with the Melech, capture Eretz Mitzrayim. Let's say we want to expand our boundaries. With the Melech and the Sanhedrin, we take over Egypt. Are we permitted to live in Egypt? The answer is yes. If Beis Din takes it over, then we're allowed to live there. However, in fact, we know where it came up, this isn't a hypothetical. In 1973, during the war, the Jews for a certain time were actually living in Egypt. They were davening, they set up yeshivas in Egypt. And I'm not getting into the politics, whether the prime minister has a din of a melech or not in the Israeli state, but if you assume it does, so then it was an Israeli government taking over, then it would be permitted. But the Rambam writes, if you have a Jewish Malchus in there, it no longer has the din of Mitzrayim. It's an extension of Eretz Yisrael. However, what are the implications according to the Rambam? If some other nation took it over, let's say Iraq took over Egypt, the prohibition, the Isser Omedes, the prohibition still remains. It's Dafka, if a Jewish government takes it over, then it takes on a din of Eretz Yisrael. However, if some other nation takes over, it's still Usser. So it's clear the Rambam seems to have nothing to do with the people, it has to do with the land of Mitzrayim. So again, a very nice shot by the Pre-Chadash, but it will not help us with the Rambam, because the Rambam seems to hold it's a din in the Makom, not a din in the people. You with me or not?
Yeah, I'm with you, but it seems that it's more the governance of the land. If the governance is
only Jewish,
if it's just Jewish governance,
right? Because by,
because
then it becomes a din of we have a
it's the power to make Eretz Yisrael bigger.
Right.
Okay. Right, the effort's considered a din, but if it's not, but if the Syrians take over, we still, they don't have a pi halacha, that taking over is meaningless. It's still
not really the land, it's the people who take over.
No, it's the land, except it's an exception, because now it's going to become a Jewish land. In other words, if it wasn't the land, then let's say Syria took over, or America, then it should be permitted to live. In other words, the base is the exception to the rule, because that takes on a din of Eretz society, and then it has a shiloh of true mamai. In other words, it's called Eretz HaNosafah, so therefore Syria also. The Gemara talks about Syria, whether it has Kedusha Yisrael or not. Once when
why
David, yes, that's what I'm saying. It's only the exception is if the exception is if the Basin does it. But if the Basin doesn't do it, the Isser applies. So clearly, it's the Makom that the Rambam's concerned about, and not the people. So therefore, it's a nice pshat, but it won't help us in the Rambam.
Looks like nothing's helping
herself. So again, let's summarize. We had the four pshatim. We had the ritva.
He's still on the outside.
It doesn't apply at all today because kol chutz la'aretz shava. Again, it doesn't work in the Rambam. We had the Mari Kash only in Alexandria where they were slaves. That doesn't hold. That doesn't look too good because it was right near the Mediterranean Sea. It doesn't seem to be a pshat in the Rambam. We had the Yireim. The Isser is going from Israel to Egypt, and according to the Divrei Shaul, the 42 steps. And we had the pre-chadash that it's a din in the gavra, not the chefza. But probably the most simple answer, which you alluded to in the beginning, so how did the Rambam live in Egypt? Most probably the most simple answer is, and probably the true answer is, he wasn't able to leave because he was the doctor of the sultan, and if he would have tried to leave, they would have killed him. So true, the Rambam would have liked to get out. The question why did the Rambam go down in the first place? It's a separate question.
Yeah, maybe. But,
well, they went.
Kill
yeah, they were escaping.
Exactly. So they
were right. Fez by the Moors, I think, were after them.
Right.
I was thinking because the guy was a melech, he was taken care of. He would be permitted to stay.
Yeah, but
not because they might. He couldn't leave because they might kill him. I mean, I thought because of the quality of the melech, we have to even like you saw the Moshe. Gave Pharaoh, COVID, even though he was
COVID and Malchus, yeah. But that means he can't leave. Okay, even if, whether you say it's
I don't know.
No, but either way, I'm saying whether he could leave because of COVID and Malchus, if he left, he put all the other people in danger because the king would be steaming.
No, and beside also, they said that he wanted to learn more, but he had to go take care of the king. Because
I know, but it's a question. Can you violate this is the right so it's covered a malchus, and it only worked. It depends if it's a sakana, because if he left, he put everyone else in danger, then he wouldn't be allowed to do that. So either way,
the chachamim can overrule the Torah.
Yeah, so it's not overruling it. That's the halacha.
That's halacha. They can do it.
That's the halacha. Is what this. You only have to give up your life for three things. Living in Egypt is not one of the things you have to give up.
Without giving your life up, you could do certain things like what they did on Mount Carmel, and they.
That's a navi. But I'm saying.
But even well.
I know, but you're talking about.
Chachamim have the power to.
That is correct.
Give you other sources and tell them their sources.
I'll give you sources. The Gemara and Avodah Zarah. You got to take. The Gemara talks about taking Gaius a haircut. It talks about having a mohawk because you're going to appear to the king. So there are cases like that. You could violate. So I'm just saying, so either Kavod HaMalchus or Sakana. That's probably, and the Rambam probably wasn't able to leave because, and that's what they say a famous joke about the briskers. You could change it about anyone you want, but the briskers, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, he spent his whole life with sweat and tears trying to figure out difficult Rambams. In fact, if you're a brisker, when you have a Rambam going against the Gemara, you call it a difficult Gemara, not a difficult Rambam. Because how do you work that up? But according to the Rav Chaim spent his whole life and the salvation figuring out, so they say over the story like this, when after 120 years, when Rav Chaim went up to Shamayim, so what happened was, he ran over to the Rambam. The Rambam said, great work, you spend your whole life I'm really impressed with what you wrote. You have any questions for me? Rav Chaim said, you have two questions. There are two Rambams I couldn't figure out. He said, tell me which ones.
So he tells me
the first one, he says, he goes through the whole explanation. Rav Chaim says, Geschmack, Gewaldic, great pshat. I have one more. What about this Rambam? Rav Chaim says, no, that's a tos hatfus, that's a printing mistake. So Rav Chaim slapped the Rambam in the face and said, that's not the way you learn a Rambam. If you know Briskas, you know what I'm talking about. They don't accept printing mistakes in a Rambam. Obviously, that's if nothing else to say, you say it's a printing mistake.
Yeah.
You have to. Rav Chaim spent his time figuring out what the real pshat in the Rambam was. So either way, the simple pshat in the Rambam is probably because he couldn't leave, and therefore that's why he didn't go. But either way, according to you have all the other four pshatim. But where did the pre-Chadish get this?
I just want to back up the machlokas, not the machlokas, the approach of the Chefza and the Gavra.
The pre-Chadish, yeah.
Where does that really stem? When I was in yeshiva, I never heard that whole...
terminology?
Yeah, basically. But lately, when I go to different shiurim, that's all you hear
it's
about.
It's the Brisker terminology, the Salavachik. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, everyone, I'm going to say, but they... But now in yeshivas they use it, it's overused now.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's gavra chefsa these days.
But
now, you can't go to a shiur without hearing it. So, Rav Chaim revolutionized the way they learned in yeshivas. He got into a more, like hakiras, the two ways to view everything, and what a nafkamin is. I'm sure before him they knew how to learn also, but they learned the same,
so
but he introduced
what was his special method, the Briska method.
Yeah, that's...
Is what?
Halachic analysis. You take the halacha. That's why Briskers are very machmir in everything, because they view everything like there's always two sides to look at it. And they equally see both sides of the coin, and therefore, okay, so we don't know how we pass, and we have to go to Chumra. That's part of Briska. The Briska Chumra is a totally different... Briska Chumra is based on real sort, and where Briska Chumra is, you have how you learn Rishonim or Machlokas in Rishonim, and they'll go with Chumra. It's not based on some minig or that. That's not Briska Chumra. If you is based on because it's real, the real doubts in the way that it's based on the learning process. They see both sides of the coin equally, and therefore the Machmer many times. But it's based on Rishonim. It's not like based on Chumras based out of nowhere. All the Chumras are based on Rishonim, so therefore they have, there's logic behind the Chumras.
But everything else was also analysis and...
No, it's a different type of analysis. It's just more 20th or 21st century thinking now. But of course, the Rishonim knew that also. It's just how, it's how he explained things. It's like anything. In other words, it's not like the Ritva can learn that way or other Achronim. In other words, everyone knew this except that today, he just... In other words, they didn't write it that way. He's the one who publicized it. Now you have all, everyone claims they're a Brisker today.
Mm-hmm.
Or put it this way, a lot of people like the Brisker derech of learning, but they don't like the chumras of the Briskers. So they only take the word. They're only Briskers for learning, but not for adhaga.
We can still got Rambam in Egypt. How's he get out?
Okay.
We answered how he got out. It was a sakana. So what was the pre-chadish's chiddish? Where did he get that from, about the Isser Gavra, not the Isser Chef, so that the Isser's on the person...
It's on Cherev, you said.
No, I know, but where did he get that from? How did he know? So he got it from a Rambam. Mm. Because this Chiddush comes from a Rambam. What does the Rambam write? The Rambam writes in Sefer HaMitzvah, he gives the philosophy, the Tam HaMitzvah. Why is it usher to go back to Mitzrayim, the Rambam writes? The Rambam himself writes, because the people were corrupt, and we don't want to learn from the Maisa Harayim. Therefore, you should never return to that land because the people there are corrupt, they're tameh, they're full of znus and everything. So the Rambam himself writes it to the people.
He counts it as a mitzvah not to return to Egypt?
To the Rambam?
The 16th, the Sefer Chinuch doesn't.
Right, so therefore, the Rireyim, and the Rireyim also says that way, they get it from the Rambam, and the Rireyim says the Yisra is to learn from the Maisim. And therefore, so Sancheiriv mixed them up. It makes sense to say, so therefore the pre-Chaddish is a natural extension. If it's the people, it's no longer the same people. It should be okay. Where did the pre-Chaddish go wrong, according to some? So the plan is like this. It's a famous sugya in Shas we have all over, but it's famous in the Sanhedrin. It's in Baba Metzia. It's all over. There's a discussion in the Gemara about whether we're darshinan taima dekra. In other words, do we take the reason and limit or broaden the scope of the mitzvah? For instance, the Torah says you cannot take collateral from a widow. It doesn't say why. But Pashas is because she has no husband, she doesn't have money, so therefore you don't want to take collateral.
And you take one from a rich
widow. So then the Gemara says, what about taking collateral from a rich widow? She has independently wealthy, she has a nice life insurance policy, whatever the reason, she's independently wealthy, Martha Stewart, whoever. So
Martha Stewart, the poor Martha.
Or Leona Helsley, whatever her name is. So Leona, either way, Leona, so
the witch.
So it depends. So if your machlok is in the Gemara, Rabbi Huda says no, you can't take
collateral
because the Torah says you can't take it, and that's it. Ain darshin and time at the kra. Rav Shimon says darshin and time at the kra, and therefore Rav Shimon says you take the reason if it's a rich widow, so you're allowed to take collateral. So it's a machlok in the Gemara between Rabbi Huda and Rav Shimon. We passed in like Rabbi Huda. We assume we're not darshin and time at the kra. As a general rule, we aren't darshin and lahalacha, that is, we do it when we're learning, if we want to understand the nature of the prohibitions, but lamaisa, we are darshin and time at the kra. So it's true, the pre-chadish is 100% right, that the reason of the mitzvah, the Rambam agrees, the reason is the people, but all the Rambam, when it comes to halacha, the Rama, we paskin, we're not darshin and time in the Quran. I can't limit the scope of the mitzvah. But in theory, you're right. Because we can't darshin and time in the Quran. We can't limit the scope of the mitzvah. So that's why the Rama still holds. The Anshe, living in Egypt, is still a problem. And that's what they say, that was Shlomo's mistake. That Shlomo's mistake was, you know what, I'll go down to Egypt, but I won't learn from the Maitim Ram. And therefore, he was darshin and time in the Quran. That was his mistake. Right, so therefore, what about, so we said, living in Egypt's a problem according to the Rambam.
We don't know if he really married. He made arrangements with them.
Well, no, but he married. I read somewhere, and that's when Rome was founded.
That's a separate, she definitely married. The question is if she converted or not.
Yeah.
That's the Rambam is the biggest Rishon who goes into that issue.
I read it somewhere, and they said that's when Rome was created. They said the staff and the thing, and they created Rome. When he married somebody from Egypt,
it's an apparent contradiction in the Rambam whether she was, you know, she actually whether it was a good conversion because she had a avodah zarah in her suitcase at the time. She was hiding it from the Beis Din. So either way, go. So according to so if you want to live in Egypt today, you have the Ritva to rely on. You have the Marikash, at least in Cairo. You have the Yireim, not to go from Israel but going from somewhere else, and you have the Pre-Chadash. But according to the Rambam, it still should be prohibited. However, so what about visiting Egypt, according to the Rambam? According to others, you could live there, so of course you could visit. But according to the Rambam, so I want to bring a proof that the Rambam would say, even though you can't live there,
you can visit.
Why? But what's their proof? Because they want to say, because the Rambam writes, you're allowed to go down for business. So this is like you're allowed to go down for business temporarily. Visiting, you're only going for a week, 2 weeks. So this is like it's permitted to go down temporarily for business. You got to go down for visiting. But others say, no, that's not a good comparison. It's true the Rambam says business, but there's a fundamental difference between going somewhere on a business trip and going down on a tour. Business, the assumption is anyway, you'll be involved in your business. You don't have time to go around touring, learning from the culture, learning from the people. Hopefully, you'll be working on your business deal. If you're going touring, the whole purpose of touring is to learn the culture and to tour. So someone, even according to the Rambam, some might say, according to the Rambam, even touring is us because that's goof what it's against. Touring is against the whole purpose of going down there. So since we come out with the Chumrah, that according to the Rambam, you can't live in Egypt and you can't visit Egypt, at least I want to end with a kula. I want to tell you, if you're thinking about going on a trip to Egypt, maybe I can give you another place you can go to. If you according to the Rambam, you can't go to Egypt, Perhaps it's somewhere else that you could go. Where could you go to? So the Tiferes Yisrael, I think on the Mishnayos in Shabbos, he writes that the North Pole, the Arctic, you know, the Arctic Circle, he says, it's there, it's daylight for months at a time there. So what do? You get there for Shacharis to put your tefillin away for 3 months? Or what do you do for Shabbos? What do you do for all these mitzvahs? So the Tiferes Yisrael says, you cannot, a Jew cannot go visit the North Pole and the Arctic because he can't do the mitzvahs. That's the Tiferes Yisrael. But the post can point out, the Rambam disagrees with this. According to the Rambam, it's permitted to go to the North Pole. How do we know? Because the Rambam says it. What's the Lashon HaRambam? Mutar lishkon bechol ha'olam. The Rambam says you can live anywhere in the world, chutz mi Mitzrayim. That means, and the Rambam knew the world was round. It wasn't like the people who think that it was first discovered by Columbus. In fact, the people in the Gemara knew about it. How do we know? Because the Mishnah writes in Avodah Zarah. The Mishnah says in Avodah Zarah that that if you see an Avodah Zarah holding a ball in its hand, so Tosis writes, why is that Avodah Zarah? Because the ball represents the world. The world is round, and it shows the Avodah Zarah controls the whole world. So Rav Yaakov Emden writes, not only did Rebbe, who wrote the Mishnayos, know that, but obviously the people in the Mishnah, even the Goyim knew it, because the Goyim were the ones who made the Avodah Zarah. So that's another myth. We knew the Rambam knew, and many people way before knew the world was round. So he knew that the world was round. So the Rambam nevertheless writes, even though it's us that live in Egypt, but we have a hetter. If you're thinking about visiting the Arctic or North Pole, you could rely it based on the Rambam. Then you have a question, what do you do exactly once you're there? How do you keep Shabbos? How do you daven? And that's a separate discussion they talk about. Maybe some say you just make up a 24-hour time and you split it. Others say, Rav Deva Feinstein writes, even though you don't see the sun, but let's say you figure out from where the sun is in the east to the west, it still sets and rises the same way, even though it's still light. People have different sheets how you go about. But according to the Rambam, he's not saying it's wrecked. Maybe you have a Chabad minion there. Who knows anymore? Chabad's everywhere, right? As one said, someone said, Coke and Chabad are everywhere.
They ain't in Egypt, are they?
And in fact, and therefore, and the fact that it's light out.
Mubarak has his own Chabad house. What are you talking about?
And let me conclude. Yeah. The fact that it's light outside doesn't mean it's not considered night, because there's a whole question in the Mefarshim, and I'll use the yeshivish lingo, and I'll explain it. But what's pshat? We know the halacha is, as we mentioned last night, when the three stars come out, it's nighttime. You know, Seitzach Chochavim is the halachic definition of Laila.
Right.
So the question is, what's pshat? Is it what they call in yeshivas a Siba or a Simen? Rav Chaim Wasserman writes this question, who was killed in the Nazis, as Mach Shemo, he was killed during the Holocaust, or before. So he writes, he clears the Chakira, is it a Simen, or what do I mean if it's a Simen or a Siba? A Siba means is it's the cause. The three stars being out causes it to be called nighttime. What do they say? No. The three stars are a simen. Something to do with the three stars coming out, but when I see three stars out, I know it's nighttime. It's not because there are three stars out. It's coincidental. That's a good sign. What my nafkamina? Which one is it? So Rav Elchanan wants to say it's only a simen. It's only a sign. How does he know it? We go back to Maisa Bereishis, because we know the Torah says, Vayera Boker Yom Echad, Vayera Boker Yom Sheni, Vayera Yom Shlishi. When was the sun and stars created? Day four. So the fact that Torah calls it day and night has nothing to do with the stars. So he says it's a simen. That's why even on the North Pole, the fact that it's light outside doesn't mean it's not considered halachically choshek. So we see it's a simen, not a siba. So therefore, if you don't, you know, you could stop planning a trip to the North Pole now in the Arctic.
I have another question.
But you could live with the penguins.
So you're saying that's a substitute, but what about Mitzrayim?
No, so it's according to the Rambam, it still could be prohibited today. I'm saying you have the other people to rely on. You have the Ritva, they have the other Shita. I'm saying, according to Shita the Rambam, it seems to be it's still usher today. But according to other Rishonim, it's mutter.
Unless you're going for business, or unless you're going to maybe serving royalty for a few.
Right.
Well, what happened now? There was a...
What if it was...
Somebody made a nusra, you can't visit Spain.
Right.
Much later, now.
So that's what some point out, that people don't like that, because they say...
Who was it? I forget the name.
Different. They said people say... People said about Germany also.
Well, so, I never heard about it. I heard definitely was Spain.
No, but I know, but I'll tell you why. Because
I remember somebody said since they were good to the Jews and the Nazis let them pass through their lands, a lot of them got to England through there. They got deported. Somebody said they did away with that gene, said that's impossible. Once guy makes a heter, once a guy makes a thing, who's going to take it away?
That's a separate issue, but I'm saying it. But the poor people point out is today, according to many opinions, the prohibition of going back to Egypt does not apply. So if you're telling me that the Torah prohibition doesn't apply, you're going to tell me now you can add a new one of Spain and Germany. So most we don't assume you have the power to do it. If you don't, if you want to take on your, I understand personally, if a person went through the Holocaust or they have family, they don't want to go back to Germany.
But the issue was a normal person. It was a chacham.
Okay, so I'm just saying, I'm not saying, so I'm... So obviously he felt you could.
It's like the issue to have two wives.
Okay,
right?
So I'm not,
have one wife,
I'm not saying no. I'm saying the consensus is
according
that...
According to the paper lately,
the consensus
so many
is not accepted.
Back to Germany, that they've imposed a quota in 2006 to only allow 11,000 Russian Jews to come to Germany, because so many are coming there.
I heard another... there was a newspaper article out of Britain. It said the following statistic, which it might be true in America also, but it was in Britain. I think it was 65% of all women under 40 never heard of Auschwitz. 65% of all women under 40 who live in Great Britain, women never heard of Auschwitz.
65% of all the people.
That's what I'm saying. No, and in fact, it's the problem is today.
So German women.
Yeah, yeah, Auschwitz, and even not even Germans, people in Europe.
I think I would say
Europeans.
Yeah, Europeans.
I could find the United States, too.
I'll tell you, because what happened was, initially, right after the Holocaust, they felt bad, they used to teach about it, but they have a dilemma, the Germans, is how could people feel pride being a German citizen and know about, look, that these Germans, look what they did, so therefore they don't really teach it anymore.
You got people teaching in college in the United States saying that Holocaust.
They don't teach it. They teach it. A guy got out. They teach about the Holocaust about one paragraph. This and that was it. And I'm sure today. I'm sure it could be in America also.
You
like
go to the colleges. I'll bet you 65% of the colleges.
They might know about global warming, but they won't know about the biggest evil in the world history. That's what they teach in universities today. You know all the nonsense, but about the biggest evil ever that they don't teach.
Well, even now today, they're killing millions of blacks.
Yeah, no one knows about Sudan. No
Everybody
one cares.
Knows. You hear Jesse Jackson say anything about it? Not a word. Not a word, because the Arabs are giving them money.
No, but because everyone has their own agenda. But Arabs are killing Arabs, or Muslims, or Christians are killing Muslims. No one cares. It's only if blacks are killing, it's only if whites are killing blacks they care. Well, blacks kill blacks, no one could care less.
The whites
they all have their own
blacks.
Agenda.
If you want to call the Arabs whites, they're certainly not black.
I had another question, but I forgot it.
You remember.
You follow or not?
Yes, you go.